I do see sometimes a race to the bottom of the brainstem, in which our media is more interested in getting a rise out of us emotionally than like putting out truth. But as a media creator, I'm a big believer in that you have to meet people where they're at. And so with this show, for example, maybe we make some really great 30 to 40 second clips that create intrigue that send people to go listen to a full hour and a half conversation. I think instead of trying to fight the nature of reality and the human brain, you have to get your foot in the door somehow. You have to meet people where they're at. You have to get their attention.
Hey everyone, Ronan here. You're listening to A Good Long Podcast, my podcast exploring the lessons for how to live a good, long life. Well, I used the word my in that first sentence. That's a bit of a misnomer. From its very inception as the podcast Field Tripping, this podcast has been the product of the effort of a number of important people. Corey Harrison, Conrad Page, Macy Baker all deserve credit. But there is one person who has been more instrumental to the rebirth of this podcast as a good long podcast than anyone, not only through his hands-on commitment to helping to produce it, but also because his review of Field Tripping a couple years ago, in which he gave us a 10 out of 10 review on his podcast, Podcast People, was one of the things that inspired me to get back in front of the mic after I left Field Trip. In my life, I have never met anyone so committed to the craft of podcasting, nor have I met anyone who believes so fervently in the power of podcasts to move a generation. His name is Chris Van Loan, and he is our guest today. Chris is a drama school flunky, sorry Chris, had to mention that, the founder of the Van Loan Film Co., and as you'll hear in this conversation and many conversations to come, a genuinely good person. I hope you enjoy getting to know Chris in this conversation and in the months and years ahead as much as I have. Enjoy this conversation, and if you do, please subscribe to the podcast and share it with your friends. The more people Chris and I can reach, the more people we can help to hopefully live a good, long life. This time I'm not fucking around with not hitting record. For everybody listening, Chris and I had a wicked, probably hour-long conversation a couple weeks ago, and yours truly forgot to hit record. Although, as Chris is the producer of this podcast, we can all blame him. So, fuck you, Chris.
Yeah, I like to say, even monkeys fall from trees. You know, that's my favorite saying around this. It's like, I've been doing video production.
You call me a monkey?
No, myself.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think there's some shared blame here, a little bit.
Yeah, I'll take that. I think that's the truth, but I much prefer the expression, there's no problem, a little work and a lot of shifting the blame can't fix.
Yeah, sorry I'm a little late to the call. I was just drying my hair, you know.
Me too.
You know how it is.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Spoiler alert, I thought we would do something fun at the end of this call and give you a lightning round of very quick questions. Doesn't have to be quick answers. And one of them is if you've ever considered moving to the United States. So hold off on that. Well, let's save that for later.
Sure, but this conversation is more about getting to know you than it is me. So as long as I'm allowed to fire that lightning round back at you, then all good.
What, have I ever considered moving to Canada? That's a no.
No, have you ever considered moving to the U.S.? Because let's be honest, Texas is not the U.S.
That's fair. We are most likely to secede. I don't know if you know about like the big secessionist movement here. Because
I'm not surprised.
Texas used to be its own country, like briefly.
Yeah.
So we have Six Flags under Texas, the amusement park, because we have flown six flags over this place.
Oh, wow.
And one of which was the Texas flag, where we were just like an independent country. We also have our own power grid.
Yep.
Which sounds good in theory until it goes out.
And so you get a winter storm. I remember hearing that. Tucker Max was telling me that like during that time, I guess he was smart, but he had frozen a whole bunch of beef and gave it to friends because everybody lost their mind.
That sounds like him.
Yep.
But, you know, things are going good amidst all of the crazy supplements and stuff I have. I'm actually feeling a lot of sharpness off of this one called acetyl L-carnitine.
Yep.
I feel like a lot of these nootropics just don't really do anything, but I'm feeling a slight edge there.
Yeah.
But more importantly, yesterday I spent $40 on a Safari extension app called Cold Turkey.
Okay.
To keep myself from going to certain websites like Facebook and Reddit during work hours.
Okay.
And I don't know. I'm a little bit ashamed. It feels like a little bit of defeat that I can't just do it like on own.
Listen, I thought about buying OnePlus phones, for example, because they have lockout features as well. You're preaching to the choir on that.
But, you know, it made me think about how after reading a little bit of like Stephen Pressfield talking about like turning pro.
Yeah.
When you're running your own business, I run this video marketing agency in Austin, that you are the business owner and you're also the employee, at least in my business. I don't have a bunch of employees. I'm also an employee. And sometimes I'm not the best employee. I'm like goofing around on Facebook in the middle of the day. I'm justifying, I need to see what's happening on Instagram with this client or this, competitor that I'm modeling clips off of. And you just get sucked into a rabbit hole of looking at cats and whatever else.
Yeah. Instagram's got my number these days about all the parent memes about like how child number two just gives no fucks and all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, that is me. But I hear you. It's it's so, it's not even, here's the thing. It's not even Facebook and Twitter and Instagram for me. It's the news. It's Apple fucking news. Cause in my head, it feels like Facebook and Instagram and all the social media sites, they're like garbage candy, but the news, well, that's informing me. I'm getting smarter and more thoughtful. And then I remember, like most news is junk these days and it's totally clickbaity and not really researched. And that to get real news, you have to read things like The Economist and The New York Times, where they actually pay attention to what they put in print. Whether you agree with their politics or not, you can actually at least have some satisfaction that knowing that some thought was put into it. But it's just as bad. So I hear you. It's the whole gamification of using a computer, right? And I hate it all.
Yeah, no, I got rid of the news a long time ago, but yet I still listen to like two political podcasts this morning.
Yeah, which ones?
You know, you have The Daily with New York Times, and then you have the All In Fellas. That's part of the problem with like being a political junkie and a news junkie is like everyone sounds really confident in their opinions.
Yep.
And you feel like, yes, I'm a well-informed citizen who is staying up to date on all of the things. And let's be honest, a little bit of procrastination and just not doing the things that we know actually enrich our lives, help us grow.
Well,
I don't know. It's just part of life.
I would be more self-compassionate about that, which is, who decides what helps us grow or, you know, gives us meaning or purpose? Like that's totally fine. If that's your jam, then do it. That's totally all good. I think one of the things we've fallen prey to in society and social media is that we constantly got to be doing all the right things, right? Like we got to be eating right and working out, and we're not working out, we're meditating or hanging out with friends because these are the things that lead to a good life. And it's like, whoa, says fucking who? Right? Like, just have compassion that like, as long as you feel good doing it and you don't feel dirty and gross afterwards, which is how I feel after looking at social media most of the time, then it's fine. And if you do feel gross and dirty afterwards, then it's worth spending $40 on that program. Yeah. I thought there were some free ones for that kind of stuff though, but
I had to get the premium one. Because I got it yesterday and I thought I would go the free route. And then it turns out I actually need all the deluxe features when you're an internet addict like me.
Of course, they screw you like that.
But, you know, when you're a personal development bro, it's interesting how there's such a blurry line between doing things that are good for you because you're trying to optimize yourself versus because you're just like relaxing. So you can get up and say, I need to immediately wake up and expose my eyes to sun so it'll sync my circadian rhythm. And then I need to get some vitamin D on my skin. And so it's like this intellectualizing of like what could just be a nice walk.
Yeah. Oh, of course. the whole optimization thing needs like someone needs to take a gun and much like that woman from South Dakota, put a bullet in it. It's like, we got to stop. you know, and that's, again, a lot of the impetus for this podcast, which is like, stop worrying about all the shit you should be doing. Here's the one thing I can guarantee for all of us. So we're going to die, right? Unless someone comes up with something pretty soon, all the people listening to this podcast are going to die at some point in the next 100 years. So
not Brian Johnson. He's going to have his brain suspended in liquid or in like a robot.
Yeah, it's or... sure. you know, and so it's like, okay, so what do we actually do with this time? And there's no right answer, I don't think, but, you know, listening to people talk about how they spend their time may give you some ideas. Not, you know, it's one of those things when I'm very conscious about trying to make this not too prescriptive. It's like, hear the stories, find what moves you, find what touches you, and then start exploring. That's my hope for this podcast, instead of all of the list of 10 things you should be doing right now, instead of doing what you're doing.
Well, I was, yeah, this morning I told you I was listening to the Scott Galloway episode.
Yeah.
And that felt like an excellent use of my time. And it's so interesting how, as a medium, I think people see podcasts as like this very ephemeral, here today, gone tomorrow kind of thing. And as someone who loves podcasts, I hope that maybe some of them could almost shift into being more of like the respect of like a novel that you can come back to or, you know, a short audiobook. So for me, I love to go back to a Tim Ferriss episode from 5 years ago, because the underlying principles of like marketing and human psychology like never change. Like the tactics change, but people don't. And some conversations are just timeless. And so, I don't know. I think you've had a lot of conversations that are worth revisiting. Yeah, I wanted to ask you. I know you said this is more about me, but I have all these questions here.
All right. Well,
that I wrote up around.
All right. Why don't we ping pong questions back and forth?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to hit you up with my standard slate of questions, because I'm curious to know the answers, even though we've spoken many times. So, I don't know if we said this already. I apologize. But for everyone listening, and we may have to edit this out because maybe I'll put this into the intro, but Chris has become, I'll call you the producer of A Good Long Podcast, but I think that's probably an unfair title. It's much more complex and nuanced and involved in that. And you're going to start hearing his voice more and more in all of our conversations. So instead of having some random voice, ghostly voice intercede in some of the podcast episodes, I thought it was a good idea to have everyone get to know Chris. So when you do hear his voice in these conversations, you know where that's coming from. So that's the background to this conversation right now.
How about like chief podcast officer? Like, I've always wanted to be a C-suite level something. I think that carries a certain like prestige. If I could be like a CPO.
You can be the CPO. I don't care. I was always a fan. I forget what, there was some board game company. I forget which one it was, but they refused to give themselves traditional titles. So the person who played the role of what would conventionally be known as a CEO took the title of Grand Poobah. And I'm like, yeah, that's the way it should be. Like, we should all give ourselves absurd titles. And
yeah,
if you want to be chief podcast officer, by all means, you can be chief podcast. I guess that leaves the question of what does that make me?
Chief podcaster. They're actually kind of the mascot of the show. You know, your face is plastered all over all of the promotional material.
Okay. As long as someone can make a furry costume out of me, I'm all for it. Let's do it.
You know, we were talking about merch the other day.
Sure. I've actually got Walker working on some merch for us. Walker's cool. The one who put together, Walker Monroe is the one who put together the podcast art that you see on your phone that no one really looks at, but it's there and it's a really nice design, I think.
But, you know, I think there's something to what you're saying about almost like the speed of content. And it seems like you've taken an intentional choice by calling it A Good Long Podcast, that it's like, there's a space to it. It's almost like you and a friend are going for like a walk through the woods and you're having a conversation about life. It isn't like, what are the 5 hacks or what are the 3 tips to success?
Yeah.
And so it seems intentional on your part to, and yet ironically, the podcasts aren't like 3 hours long or you know,
yeah, but
there's a certain pacing that feels very real. And hopefully the listeners feel like they are dropping in on something that is like authentic.
Yep. Yeah, it was, I don't know if it's consciously inspired, but unconsciously, when I was in Portugal for the Becoming retreat, and anybody who's listening to this one probably heard the conversation with Florence Schaefer. And every day we did what was called the council. You know, when we'd sit around at the end of the day and just talk about what was top of mind. And it reminded me that we no longer have the, you know, the campfire that everyone sits around at the end of the day to share stories and insights and wisdom and tales and all that kind of stuff. And through most of human history, that's how knowledge and wisdom was transferred. You know, and then the printing press came along and whatever it was for 1534, and that's been wonderful. But what I've realized is that books are an inadequate medium. They're a great medium, but they're inadequate in some ways because the intensity and emotion by which people share their thoughts and their stories from their own voice is a huge part of communication as well. And it means that listening to people talk, mostly unedited, I think will convey a lot more than what any book can convey. When it comes to these esoteric questions, because we're really going after the esoteric questions in this podcast. So anyway, that's part of the thinking and the reason, yeah, there's supposed to be a lot of space because sitting around the campfire, there's a lot of space to just talk and think and reflect and yeah.
That's definitely lacking for sure. And I'm very bullish on the medium of podcasting, obviously. I think it's like the questions asked are more important than any answers. I'm listening to Ryan Holiday's book called Right Thing, Right Now.
Okay.
But of course, since I'm a podcast producer and you know, chief podcasting officer, I'm listening to the audio book. And in a sense, if it's, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours long, again, there's almost a blurry line between, and it's read by the author, an audiobook versus a conversation or a podcast, of course, but that took him maybe a year and a half to 2 years of research and distilling his ideas into something like very concise. Yeah. And yet it doesn't have that campfire feel of like just hearing two people chat and pontificate and bounce ideas off of each other.
Yeah, because it's highly edited, you know, and it's, even though you're hearing it from his mouth, you're not hearing the true experience from his mouth. You're hearing the, you know, prescribed, translated into the written word and then read aloud version of it. So again, I think that's there's wonderful attributes to it. There's downsides to this, which is you hear a lot of people saying, and you know, and like, specifically me, that makes it less elegant, I guess, but more real, I guess is the argument.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on the current state of the personal development space / podcasting space? Because it's matured a lot over the last, let's say, 3 or 4 or 5 years, but it also feels like it's changing in a lot of ways.
I'm kind of the wrong person to ask, to be quite honest. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. You know, I don't have a lot of time to listen to podcasts, and I find most of them, some of them are incredibly enjoyable and insightful. I realize like the ones I like the most are the narrative driven ones, where they're telling a story and then interspersing interview into that, as opposed to the conversational ones, which is ironic because this is a purely conversational one. Although I do want to experiment with trying to weave more narrative into it. You know, I think the podcast market is saturated. 5 years ago, it felt like 5 years ago, having written a book was the new business card. And
totally.
Now it feels like having your own podcast is having your own book kind of thing. So there's a lot of it. I think you'll see a lot of it start to fade out, which is people don't get the returns. You know, it's, I feel like I do this because it enables me to have really interesting and deep conversations with people I probably wouldn't otherwise have the opportunity to have meaningful and deep conversations with. And that's what I get out of it. And my hope is that people who listen get something out of it as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting.
But it requires, let me just finish that thought, which is like, it requires commitment. It's one of those things. So yesterday, this will come out, but I had Howard Glassman. For anyone in the greater Toronto area, you may know him as Humble from Humble of Fred. He was a big radio host. And he was talking about how he was a comedian in the late 70s, early 80s, and he moved to LA to try and make it big. And, you know, after a while, he gave up. And he was just too lonely, spending too much time on the road, and he got an offer to become a radio host, and he took it. And, you know, all the people he was doing that with that had the resilience to stick it out, by and large, made it. You know, they were just on the cusp of that inflection point. And I don't know if I'd call it a regret of his, but had he stuck with it, there's a very good chance the trajectory of his life would have been very different. And I feel like that's going to be the same thing with podcasting, which is a lot of people will dabble. And the people who just have a dogged commitment to it, and I'm by no means saying that I've been perfect by any stretch, but if you keep at it, then hopefully you'll achieve what you want, both in terms of growth, listeners, but an impact, and hopefully also the satisfaction that comes from having these kinds of conversations.
Yeah, I actually wanted to touch on that as I was trying to cut you off and interrupt you, is the amount of work it is and the dabblers. So it's interesting thinking back. I have edited an episode of a podcast every single week, 52 weeks a year since like 2016.
That's a lot of editing.
8 years now. And I have people come up to me all the time, every month. So like, it's kind of like the tire kickers. Like, I'm thinking about launching a podcast. And one of the first things I have to say is like, you might be underestimating how much work this is. The listeners of this show might not realize how much email goes into coordinating guests, how much work goes into writing out questions, how much work goes into reading the books of authors who come on the show. And I don't know, you have a way of making it seem kind of effortless and easy. And I guess that just comes from genuine curiosity. And the problem is, for me, running this, you know, agency, is that people want the end result without putting in the work or without having the genuine curiosity, which is just, how do I have a bigger audience? How do I make more money? How do I send more people to my products and offers and masterminds and retreats? And that's almost a little bit of like, how do I take a shortcut and sidestep all of the work that goes into this medium, which is in some degree kind of like an edutainment that has to be educational and informative and interesting, in which you're competing with all of the other podcasts in the world. But yeah, it's just interesting how many people don't realize like it's actually a bit of work.
Yeah, it is. And to be clear, SmartList meets none of the criteria. I guess it meets the interesting criteria, but certainly not educational and informative. But I still like it because it makes me laugh.
But I think is there anything I've learned from that show? Not really.
No, guaranteed not. Except that. The one thing I have learned is the value of like what long-term intimate relationships mean. So you can just hear the mutual respect and love those guys have for each other. And I think that's awesome. But yeah, I think the fundamental question you're getting at, and I think it's part of just our capitalist society, not that I'm anti-capitalist, I'm not, but we're very teleological. We're always focused on the end. You know, what's it going to get me? Is it going to get more listener, whatever. As opposed to just enjoying the process. So that's what I'm trying to do here. Like, again, I have ambitions and I have hopes for this podcast becoming much larger and reaching a lot of people. And maybe one day we can make some money off of it, which would be great.
All the money. That's what it's all about.
It's always about the money. But it's like, if we never get there, I'll have had a good time anyway. You know, that's one of my favorite Tom Robbins quotes. Have a good time anyway. And so that's what keeps me coming back to it.
Yeah. It's interesting. My little podcast is just a passion project I do for fun. It's also been in dormancy. It might see a reboot here soon. And I was listening to an episode I did in 2021 about Kanye West. And a lot has happened with that guy since then. But also, I've grown and changed into a different person. And so I'm interested, I was going to ask you, with all of the various conversations you've had with people over the years, is there anything that stands out to you as like new beliefs that you hold or anything that you have changed your mind about from, you know, it's been a lot of amazing guests you've interviewed over the years.
Yeah.
And also being a Kanye West fan is not easy, let me tell you.
I've never been a Kanye West fan, so that's not a problem for me. I did like Gold Digger. I'm not going to lie. That was a good song.
All right. All right.
You know, the biggest thing I've taken away is, I mean, it's starting to abate now, but then I'm not bad at this. You know, when I first started the podcast, my first instinct is like, who the fuck is going to want to listen to what I have to say, right? And then my second instinct was, am I going to have enough to talk about? Am I going to make this interesting enough to have someone like Michael Pollan or Andrew Weil or all of these well-known, very busy, highly in-demand people give me an hour and a half of their time? And I have.
And now you've got Michael Pollan retweeting the show.
And I've had him on. And actually, So when I reached out to Michael about the episode with Dacher Keltner, which just came out last week, in both of those conversations, these are two luminaries, very, very thoughtful people, come into the conversation. And each conversation, both of them hit a moment where they're like, I hadn't thought about that, Ronan. Like in a very kind of genuine and sincere way that I opened a perspective, whether they agreed with it or not, who knows? But it was very rewarding to me to feel like, oh, I can have impact on those people in a positive way and push them to think differently. And that has been the most eye-opening thing for me. You know, I've learned a ton of stuff. I've had some very genuine moments. Like I think about the conversation with Mira Etlenstein, my cousin, you know, talking about the death of her husband, and how it touched me so much and hit so many chords for me. And so it's like, did I learn something? I don't know if I could articulate it into a lesson, but it moved me, and that's worth it in and of itself in my mind.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I deeply relate to this idea of like, would people care what I have to say? Do I have an opinion? Because I've become very comfortable being the behind the scenes guys who helps other people grow their audiences. And yet, I don't know, I got into this whole world because I was like an actor and a theater kid.
Oh, yeah.
And I was in choir and I enjoy like performing. And while I'm more introverted, there's this part of me that loves being on stage. And, you know, I got to give this great talk in Puerto Rico last year to the Blue Ribbon Mastermind. And I saw this tweet, or I guess this X. I'm still trying to figure out the language around that, but
let's call it Twix.
Twix.
Delicious.
I saw this short 160 character idea the other day that kind of shook me up, and it said, the world belongs to shameless self-promoters. And at first I was like resistant to that because I don't like it when people are like really desperately trying to promote themselves all the time. And yet I couldn't help but feel that there's like a huge heaping kernel of truth in that statement. And that is ultimately what media is, whether it's a blog, whether it is making posts every day, whether it's putting on a podcast every week. I think the way it was worded was to be like slightly controversial. Mm-hmm. And yet there is something to that is, if you're toiling away in obscurity and nobody knows about you and nobody sees what you're doing and nobody's hearing your hot takes, it's like almost like, what's the point? There is value in communicating our thoughts and feelings and experiences to the world. And so it's that one really, it's like one sentence has really been lingering with me, and it's got me wanting to maybe like come out from behind the curtain a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And get back to being more front-facing, being on camera more, sharing more of my own thoughts.
It's a couple of thoughts. One is I had a couple of weeks ago, a good friend of mine, Matt Coleman, shared a new AI service that you put in some description and it'll write a song. So he put in a description of having the service write a kind of surf rock song about toilets. And it spits out what is a very could have been Weezer kind of song, you know, a 30 second clip. And he's like, this is going to fundamentally change music. And the more I thought about it, the more interesting it became, because it creates a scenario, and we won't go down the AI rabbit hole, but creates a scenario where the creation of art can be done for art's sake, right? Like if all musical need in terms of listening, what people want to hear, can be satisfied by AI, then an artist can just create art for the sake of creativity without having to have any kind of commercial mind set around it. And it was a really interesting idea to toy with, which is, and it kind of, when you pull on that thread back up to the origination of this podcast, doing it for its own sake may be the only reason to ever actually do something honestly. And I was also struggling with the idea that it feels so often, you know, people talk about and we encourage it about what mark I want to leave on the world, right? You know, and really meaningfully and sincerely held. And a lot of the time it's, I want to do good for the world. I want to shift the world in a positive way. But inherent in that statement, I is the first word in there.
Yeah.
And so there's always an ego piece to it, which is, what if it was just, I want to create for the sake of doing it. And how different our world would be if that was the case. I don't know. I haven't thought about that too much. I probably need to do some more psychedelics to really delve into that one. But you start to see how everyone's ambition to serve can often be, it's complex.
Like, it's, well, I thought complex. You were going to say somewhat of an egoic pursuit, you know?
It is, but again, it's never going to be 100% one or the other, right? There's complex. I mean, it's like next week we have Raghunath Ray Kapo coming on the podcast, and I'm reading his book all about going from punk to monk. And I can't help but, you know, the lessons that come through in Hinduism is all about serving, serving, serving. That's where happiness, and that's where, you know, you work through your karmas by serving God and serving other people. And I still can't, and I haven't got to the end of the book, so maybe there's a revelation somewhere in there, but I can't help but wonder, being like, if you're supposed to be so selfless, where does the monk decide to write a book? And this is true about Jay Shetty as well. You know,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
well, that's all about your story now. That doesn't sound very selfless. And again, there's selfless attributes to it, I'm sure, but you can't take away the egoic aspect of it. I don't think. I don't know. It's something I struggle with. I don't have perfect answers.
Oh man, I could talk with you about this for hours, because as someone who works with a lot of like influencers, thought leaders, authors, I think sometimes the character they create and the persona that they've molded serves a purpose, and that the myth may be greater than the man, but the myth may inspire people to take action, 100%. To believe in themselves, to follow their own dreams. So it's certainly like a complicated thing.
I was having this exact conversation actually. So I went to Othership, thanks Robbie Bent, yesterday with Andy O'Brien. Andy is Sidney Crosby's.
So the Sweat Lodge?
Yeah, yeah. Andy is Sid Crosby's strength trainer, and he was a trainer for the Florida Panthers, who just won the Stanley Cup. And we were talking about a lot of things, but one of the things is why hockey players do it, and is it for the glory? Is it for the money? And we both
just kind like of punching people in the face. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's going to be some of that too. There's going to be some aggression to get out. But we both kind of came to the place that if hockey players did what they did primarily, if not solely, just to inspire other people, because he was telling me when he goes back to his hometown in PEI, you know, how meaningful it is that he got to hold the Stanley Cup. And it gives people a belief that they can achieve more than maybe what they thought. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Because like you look at sports and on one level, it's just pure shameless entertainment. There's no real value out of watching people beat the shit out of each other or skate around and shoot a little black disc at each other. But then you take a step back and you realize, well, no, it gives people something to believe in. And even though there's no, I mean, it's kind of the perfect example. There's no teleological end to sports, right? Like, yeah, okay, you win, but you play for the sake of playing. And if that was what motivated most people, that'd be fucking awesome.
Yeah, yeah. The whole legacy talk that I see come up a lot, particularly around middle-aged men, is interesting because it is like, how much is it for the game, for the infinite game, for the process versus like the aggrandizement of me? I just need more me in the world. I never forget this podcast I heard with James Altucher on the James Altucher Show. He was talking about this idea of how people want to be remembered centuries after they're gone. And, you know, James actually owns a stand-up comedy club in New York City. And so he was talking to his audience and he said, hey, quick question, everyone in the audience here, does anyone know who was the president before Abraham Lincoln? Like, Lincoln was the 16th president. Who was the 15th? Not a single hand goes up. And so you're like, here's this guy who worked his whole life, grinded, aspired to become the highest office in the land, played an incredibly pivotal role in United States history before the Civil War. And yet, nobody even remembers who this president was. By the way, it's James Buchanan, by the way.
I think he's mentioned in a Simpsons song, actually.
But, you know, I mean, we can only keep so many names in our head, but it's just something about this whole, like, kind of Ozymandias idea of, like, from dust to dust. It's like we come into this world, we leave this world, and they say everyone has two deaths. The first, when you actually die, and the last time anyone utters your name or remembers who you are, and that may be a couple of generations later. But if we're honest, it's probably not going to be that much longer after we die. And so there's something to acknowledging that. And maybe once we sit with that, we can realize that, right, the legacy that can live beyond us is like through our children, through the art we create, through the conversations we have, and more of like ripples that go outward. Like if you throw a pebble into a pond, you're going to have this tiny little effect on the future of humanity. But maybe people remembering our name specifically isn't really that important.
100%. I think that's right. It reminds me, and I think if people got more comfortable with the idea that we're both infinitely meaningful and also entirely meaningless, which is a hard paradox.
Hey, speak for yourself.
James, I'm calling you James Buchanan from now on. you know, it just like grappling with that. Like the more time I spend thinking about these questions, the more I realize that the mystery and the paradox is the point. But it reminds me, all of that reminds me of something from no surprises here, Tom Robbins.
All right, here we go again.
That's why Twitter's my dearest. Every time you've shown signs of feeling sorry for yourself, I've played my blues records really loud or read to you from the horse's mouth. And that's why when you've exhibited the slightest tendency towards self-importance, I've reminded you that you and I, may be every bit as important as the president or the pope or the biggest primetime icon in Hollywood, but none of us is much more than a pimple on the ass end of creation. So let's not get carried away with ourselves. Preventative medicine, boy, it's preventative medicine. And it's like,
I like that.
Yeah, it makes it seem like all of life is just dancing through these waves, one direction and back the other, and there's no straight line, you know, in dealing with these questions.
I don't know how I feel about thinking of myself as an ass temple, but I like the idea of it's we need to be humbled, and those, you know, these ecstatic experiences. Time and nature can create that. I mean, I was just out in the Redwoods National Forest, north of San Francisco, and just seeing an old tree that's 200 years you know, 200 years old and 200 feet tall can do that too. It's amazing.
Put yourself in that tree for a second though. Like, take a moment and be like, imagine having to stay in the same spot for 200 years. And we don't know what tree consciousness is like, but let's assume that it somewhat vaguely resembles us.
Yeah, I've become a little bit of a plant dad over here. I have like 10 plants in the apartment, and it's interesting. I mean, they definitely have some level of consciousness. And, you know, our buddy Paul Stamets likes to talk about the communication that's happening in the roots underneath and the transferring of soil and nutrients. And so, yeah, it's got to be a little weird. And then some kid comes by and carves his initials in your body for some relationship that'll probably end in 3 to 6 months.
For sure. But honestly, like, I encourage you to spend some time thinking about it. It just happened randomly one time. I was petting my dog Banjo, and I looked at him, and, you know, everyone looks, and I think a lot of people are like, oh, it'd be great to be a dog, right? They're so happy. All they do is lie around and eat and get pet and all that kind of stuff. And I realized that, yes, he is happy most of the time. Like, he is in a joyous state. He's either eating, pooping, sleeping, or pretty much in a joyous state. Like, that's his existence. And I just felt how stifling that would be. Like, I couldn't put myself into that consciousness. It would be so limiting that there's only so limited range of experience that he has. And I'm like, oh, I actually think I'd want to be a dog, not from where I am right now.
You wouldn't want to be reincarnated almost as just like a rest period in between two humans. It's like the vacation, you know, it's like.
It is, but like, to, if I had to put my consciousness of where it is now and all that I'm capable of experiencing and be a dog with the knowledge of that being possible, but out of my reach.
Castrated as well. That's not.
It would kind of be castrated. He is castrated, but, it would be awful. It would be like, you know, I can't imagine, you know, and I encourage you, like, sit with it. Don't just like play with it as like a simple idea, but like, I couldn't imagine something worse than being in one of those people who are conscious, but can't move, can't do anything, but they're conscious. They're alive. They're aware, but they're stuck. Imagine being so disabled that all you can do is just sit there. And that is what that tree might be like, right? Imagine being stuck there for 500 years. All you do is keep growing up a little bit and up a little bit, and the view never changes. And maybe the view does change because you see the world change. And maybe that's all the satisfaction in the world is seeing the forest. But I don't know, this is going weird. Sorry. But
it might be kind of peaceful.
It might be terrifying too.
You know what it makes me think of is, you know, one time I tried SSRIs for anxiety and I hated it. It was terrible. I was on like Lexapro very briefly. And what you're describing, I felt to a lesser extent. I had that same feeling of like my consciousness being boxed in, where I think often people feel like on SSRIs, they're kind of just in the middle. And they can't really feel the highs and the joys of life or the depression. And there's a degree to which I'm like, and I feel like this microdosing mushrooms where I feel my emotions more deeply.
Yep.
And sometimes that sucks, but I will happily embrace the more extreme highs and lows instead of being in this like numb center.
Yeah. Who was it? It was Dacher, actually, who talks in his book about how, you know, we've come to this world in the age of reason, seeing emotions as being animalistic, right? Below us almost. But then you stop and think about it. Our emotions are our experience, right? Our thoughts aren't our experience. Our thoughts trigger feelings. And that's our experience. And those feelings are our emotions. Even though, and I would challenge you to not say those low moments suck because there's judgment built into that. They can be challenging. Like, let them be hard. That's fair, but they're not necessarily bad. And I say this knowing that when I'm in those moments too, it sucks, but, you know, just keeping that in mind, being like, oh fuck, but I get to experience this. And that's more than can be said for almost all of existence. You know, all of the universe doesn't get to experience this. I get to experience this. A few hundred billion people get to experience it, but that's it. No one else gets it.
I mean, it's funny. I'm knock on wood and in very good health and everything, but the handful of times that I've injured my back gives me gratitude for when my back is not injured. As much as it, you know, sucks to be in pain, without the experience of knowing what it's like to be feeling handicapped and limited and not mobile and not able to do things and not able to focus, it gives you a point of comparison.
Yeah. I mean, that's all the philosophers and religious people being like, why does God let bad things happen? It's like, well, because the depth of the badness is what also helps to find the depth of compassion that can exist in the world. You know, I don't know that they're interrelated. Well, I won't say they're directly related, but the harder you suffer, the more compassion you can have for other people. It's just the way it is. And so it's like, yeah, that's why it exists. Otherwise there'd be no compassion.
So you throw a quote at me. I want to throw a quote at you. That's a little bit longer from our friend, Carl Sagan, because it's about media and it feels very relevant as, you know, we're making this show together. And you've probably heard it before. Audience has probably heard it before. I just wanted to get your hot take.
A hot take. All right.
On this quote. So Sagan says back in 1995, I have a foreboding of an America in my children's or grandchildren's time, when the United States is a service and information economy, where nearly all the manufacturing industries have slipped away to other countries, when awesome technological powers are in the hands of a very few, and no one representing the public interest can even grasp the issues, when the people have lost the ability to set their own agendas or knowledgeably question those in authority, when clutching our crystals and nervously consulting our horoscopes, our critical faculties in decline, unable to distinguish between what feels good and what's true, we slide almost without noticing back into superstition and darkness. The dumbing down of America is most evident in the slow decay of substantive content in the enormously influential media, the 30-second sound bites, lowest common denominator programming, credulous presentations on pseudoscience and superstition, but especially a kind of celebration of ignorance. And it's hard not to feel like he was kind of spot on a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if you don't believe in time travel, you know, you just have to change your perspective of what time travel is. Like, that to me, and this sounds like spiritual blah, 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 I get it, but it kind of feels like he had a download from the future. He saw the future and he got that from somewhere. And he's right. So it is shocking about how accurately he predicted that. I think the one area that I would push back in is he called it the decay of America, I believe. And again, there's judgment built into that. Like, there's some path of what the ideal America is, and who knows, right? Like, if everyone finds satisfaction in clutching their crystals, like the premise of that, and I get it, I think most people would agree with it, but the premise of it is that of some utopian future that exists at some point. But what is that, and what does it look like? Because I don't know. What if everybody was fed and everyone was fulfilled? It's like, could we possibly ever be fully fulfilled, or will we always be stretching for that next thing? And if the answer is we'll never be fully fulfilled, then why does it matter if it's on a podcast talking to interesting people or clutching my crystal thinking it's going to make my life better? Because at the end of the day, everything is entirely subjective. We have to accept that to be true. So it speaks to me on one level, and it incites in me the desire to change the trajectory of what we're clearly on. The thing I've come to realize is that I don't know what a better trajectory is necessarily. You know, I have images of what I think it should be, but I guarantee when we get there, it's not going to be what we thought. And so it just gives me pause to be like, okay, well, let people, you know, again, it came up in the conversation with Howard Glassman yesterday. It's like, if we all just lived by two simple principles of the golden rule, treat people how you want to be treated, and two, mind your own goddamn business. I think this world would be a lot better place. And I don't say mind your goddamn business in a way of like just being totally apathetic to the suffering and you know, needs of other people, but don't have judgment to how people choose to live. Like, just accept that they're on their path and be happy to help, but don't impose your will and your beliefs and your desires on them. You know, but as long as you have consent as the operating thesis and compassion, God, this world would, I think, would be a lot better place.
And you fit right in Texas with the mind your goddamn business. We'll get you a shotgun. You sit on the porch.
Except for the people in Texas are probably the most judgmental people, right? They have like, it's a viewpoint of like, don't touch my fucking property. Mine is mine.
Don't tread on me.
Yeah, but it's not, hey, let's have compassion for everybody and not hold judgment towards them if they choose something different than me. And that's really what I mean by mind your business.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings because I see a lot of truth in like media becoming more short form and us moving to like the TikTokification of everything.
Yeah.
But also, I can't help but think, don't we always say this about every generation? So there's like quotes from Aristotle and Plato where they're saying that the kids today, they have no respect for their elders and they're just spend all time reading and blah, 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 like, you know, and we, back in my day, we used to cook everything by hand and they have it easy. And like, so yeah, I'm not sure, but I do see sometimes a race to the bottom of the brainstem in which our media is more interested in getting a rise out of us emotionally than like putting out truth.
For sure.
But as a media creator, I'm a big believer in that you have to meet people where they're at. And so with this show, for example, maybe we make some really great 30 to 40 second clips that create intrigue that send people to go listen to a full hour and a half conversation. And so I think instead of trying to fight the nature of reality and the human brain, you have to get your foot in the door somehow. You have to meet people where they're at. You have to get their attention and say, hey, I know you've only got 30 seconds right now. Let me just serve you up a nice clip.
Yep. Again, I get it. I'm not naive to the needs to that. And some of my views are more academic explorations than strongly held views. In this case, it's like, I have no problem with that. In that, I think I want to believe that people will get something meaningfully positive out of these conversations. And the motivation I would have for putting these ads out, yes, there's I can't deny that there's the piece of me that's going to be excited about seeing the numbers grow and influence and all that kind of stuff. That's true. But I feel more that if people are touched or moved by these conversations, and they needed to see that ad in order to experience that movement or that being touched, it's like, oh, that's okay. I you know, that's a fair balance in the grand scheme of things.
That's how I found this show, was from an ad when I was at the grocery store on Spotify. And, you know, I remember I told you like 2 years ago or something that I loved your show, but I wanted to see more of your personality come through. And I think you've done a great job of that. I mean, even just with the Scott Galloway episode, you were talking a lot about your own life. He was kind of advising you. But so I thought it would be fun to actually give you a little bit of a lightning round of quick questions so people can get to know Ronan, the man, better.
All right.
Can give me quick answers or whatever, you know, however. So
sure. Shoot.
So as I alluded to, you're very welcome in Austin if you want to come on down. Have you ever thought about moving to the United States? And if not, why not?
Yes, I have. I almost moved to New York City about 15 years ago. I got a job offer with a company called Outbrain to work sales for them, but they wanted to. And the reason I wanted to go is because I wanted to live in Manhattan. I love Manhattan. It's such a wonderful place. It's got its challenges. But the salary they wanted to pay me, I'm like, that's pretty much poverty line in Manhattan. And it would be doing stuff that I really wasn't passionate about just to move to New York. So I said no to that. But no, I've definitely considered it a number of times.
All right. All right. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll just, you know, it's not too late.
I'd love to have like a place. I'd love to have a place to go to. Like right now, my buddy Owen lives in Santa Cruz in California, and I just love that area. So like spend some time there, spend some time in Canada, return to sanity. I remember it was Carl Hart who we had on the podcast, and he was specifically talking about the Black experience in the US. And he's like, you can't be conscious and alive in America and live there full time. I think he said as a Black man, something along those lines. He's like, I just got to get out of America sometimes. Like it's just the energy here is too hot and too hard for him. So having a place to go and being able to ground back in our very reasonable, nice society in Canada every once in a while would still be a part of my life, I imagine.
Yeah, people are nice there. You know, they say sorry a lot.
We do. We say sorry instead of excuse me. And anyway, I could go off on that, but anyway.
So next question. What is one daily habit that has transformed your life? This is kind of in the health and wellness genre after all.
I don't have really daily habits. I mean, I've developed them. Like I get up, I feed my kids breakfast, I make their lunch if it's the school week. And then I work out, and that's typically my morning. I would guess fasting is probably one habit that I've noticed that when I fast, I have more energy. I feel more awake and alert, but I'm not a habits guy. I've often struggled. Maybe it's just like my inner child raging against habits, but I feel like habits often replace intuition or thinking, right? You just do it because it's become habit and because someone said it's good for you, right? And it's like, well, you know, and we haven't released this episode, but with the most recent conversation with Ben Askins, we talked about that. Like he replaced biohacking with intuition and he just trusts his body more. And so, yeah, so all that's to say is I'm not much of a habit guy, but I have my routine and I like, because it's predictable and it makes me feel good.
All right. Yeah. I like that.
What about you? Let's turn the lightning round back on you because this is also the introduction to Chris. So
one thing, I like to say is that I like to walk to the mailbox and check the mail every day, and it's not really about the mail.
Okay.
I mostly get junk mail, or it's empty, or it's something I haven't gone paperless yet, or whatever. You know, as I was talking about earlier, it's more about getting sunshine, the fresh air, pausing. You know, I'm kind of opening up my hips. And when I was injured a while back, I worked with a physical trainer who really worked with me a lot on posture.
Yep.
And like raising your rib cage kind of off of your pelvis and lengthening the spine as much as you can. And so it's really interesting how any little habit can become a very intentional, ceremony?
Yep.
Or even a moving meditation.
Yep.
And so that's the way I would describe it, is I just walk to the mailbox sometimes, like 2 or 3 times a day. Like I'll check it in the morning and then I'll check it in the evening and it'll be empty. It doesn't matter.
Yep.
It's just my little habit.
Which is awesome because if you like it, it doesn't matter. Like I'm not opposed to people sharing, you know, these lists of things that you should do because it may help you stumble into something you really like, and that's fine. It's just when you sacrifice your own intellect and intuition for somebody else's where it becomes a problem in my mind.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's great to try things out. Okay. All right.
The next one. What is one thing you miss about being a lawyer? If any.
Oh. I would say I enjoyed the intellectual rigor of reviewing a contract and looking for the precision in drafting and the kind of game theorying of like what could go wrong based on how this was written. And it was just like there was something satisfying, almost like Sudoku kind of thing of like realizing how it was done. So there was just like an intellectual game that was enjoyable in small doses. But I still do some legal drafting now, and I can't say I'm always super stoked about trying to draft things. So it was of limited enjoyment. And I guess the other thing is the camaraderie with the other lawyers. You know, they talk about how in the military the suffering creates bonding, and I think in many ways as junior lawyers that suffering creates bonding as well. And so I miss the camaraderie of that.
Yeah, the commiserating, the co-miserating.
The co-miserating, the co-regulation in misery. That's right.
But I almost fell asleep there. We're talking about drafting contracts. It's like, as a visually creative person, it's just so interesting how our brain's like different puzzles, right? And so for me, I'll use ChatGPT as a starting point for my business contracts and massage it and tweak it a little bit. One time I went to a coding. Yeah, I know. I'm going to need your help if I ever actually end up in legal trouble with some ChatGPT created contracts.
Sure.
One time I went to a coding school to learn JavaScript, and it was kind of what you were talking about, this idea of, oh, there's these puzzles we're figuring out and this is a bug and I need to debug it. But I realized like this isn't the game for me because it's more frustrating than it is enriching. I'm just like ready to throw my laptop out the window. So
my worst grade in high school was computer coding, computer programming, it was called back then. Yeah. My worst grade.
That is the beauty of our neurodiversity of all the different brain types in the world.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to throw that question back at you. Not quite as the same, but you started up, it sounded like you were a stage kid.
Yeah, sure.
Why aren't you doing that anymore?
So I actually would start at the University of Texas as a theater major. And the first semester I transitioned to a film major. And I remember very clearly thinking in my wildest dreams, if I was acting on Broadway or if I was directing a show on Broadway, it just became clear to me that wasn't really the life I wanted. And so maybe there were other ways that I could perform and share and talk. But I very clearly remember being like 18 years old and imagining the summit, the peak of this field, if I were to keep going down this road. I was like, this doesn't really appeal to me. I really got into this because I love movies. I saw Good Will Hunting when I was 11 years old and just fell in love with film and, the medium of storytelling through video.
Yep.
And I still feel that way all these years later. Occasionally I'll have a nightmare where I wake up and I've been an understudy in a play. And then they say, hey, you got to go on tomorrow and go through your script. But yeah, I don't know. There's just something about it. You know, I'll also say, I started out working with actors who are portraying someone who they're not. Mm-hmm. And then later I started working with brands and businesses who were sharing their own real thoughts and who they actually are. And I found that to be, I'd say even more rewarding is, not that I don't love movies. I still love movies.
No, I get it. I totally get it. There's an artifice to it. And there's definitely an ego in that industry. So that artifice manifests on a few levels, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, next question. What is the most surprising thing you've learned about the cannabis or psychedelic industries?
Neither of them live up to the potential of what people thought. You know, my experience in the psychedelic industry is that they can create transformative, beautiful experiences. But I genuinely thought that psychedelics could, quote unquote, save the world. And the more I see is that they can make things better without question. But they're not, either we're not ready, the world's not ready, or they don't have the potency, probably a combination of all three, to make the changes that I think a lot of people thought could happen. And that's okay. That's okay. But that's specifically about the psychedelics industry, the cannabis industry, whatever. You know, I got into cannabis because I saw a great opportunity and I wasn't scared by the potential moral or reputational ramifications of working in the cannabis space. And I think it's great. Listen, I have no problems with cannabis, but I never thought it would change the world. I just thought we should be smarter about drug policy than we were. And some people genuinely benefit from cannabis, either just by enjoying it or because it makes their lives meaningfully better on a medical level. And beyond that, so be it. What about you, at least on the psychedelic space? Because we met each other, you know, in theory through field tripping and a shared interest in psychedelics in non-ordinary states.
I think I went through somewhat of a similar trajectory just around this utopian ideal of like, if everyone could just have one good trip, like society, we're going to be holding hands and singing Kumbaya and world peace will be achieved. To, I don't know, actually some people may even become worse after a trip. Or they become more of themselves. And I don't know. It's there's this naivety and thinking like, yeah, that's why they're putting fluoride in the tap water, bros, because they don't want people to put LSD in there and the man can keep us all fighting each other. And it's like, you know, people are complicated.
They are.
So yeah, I'm a little bit less bullish, but still interested in telling those stories, like as a documentarian filmmaker. And just seeing where it goes. But I think like with anything, the truth is often found like between the extremes.
Yeah. I think it's important to keep in mind that like, even though psychedelics aren't going to move us 180 degrees from where we're going right now, if you think that direction is a negative direction, but a 1 degree shift over a long period of time leads to a very different place and a different place and a different place and a different place. And so, you know, I think maybe psychedelics do have the potential, but we just have to be a lot more patient about how that will manifest.
Or maybe we just haven't created the right lab drugs yet.
Fuck yeah.
That's the
in their experiment.
Okay, so this is truly a lightning round question. This shouldn't be a long one here. Favorite guilty pleasure food wise?
Probably pizza.
Tyra, yeah.
Actually, no, Chipotle, but I don't think it's a guilty pleasure because it's pretty healthy, but I could eat Chipotle probably every single day of the week. You?
I would say pistachio ice cream.
Okay.
Is my thing. Usually pretty healthy, but you got to have some room for just total garbage.
100%. 100%.
Okay. Favorite guilty pleasure music-wise?
Favorite guilty pleasure music. I mean, I don't know if it's guilty again, but it's like, I really like Frankie Valli and the four, was it Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons? Is that what it was? You know, 60s kind of pop rock. I really like Frankie Valli.
I was going to ask, why is it guilty? Because it's poppy?
Yeah, because it's poppy and like it's, you know, I grew up in the mid and early and mid 90s when, you know, grunge had a message that it wanted to deliver, right? And it felt important and it felt heavy. And like Frankie Valli and Four Seasons. And also like, I love a lot of what the 60s stood for and a lot of the music and the passion and the energy. And, you know, Frankie Valli was just kind of pop rock, right? Singing about love and all that kind of stuff.
Nothing wrong with that.
I don't know if it's guilty, but you know, what's his name? The guy who wrote Margaritaville.
Is that Jimmy Buffett?
Jimmy Buffett. Yeah, I love Margaritaville. I love Paul Simon. So yeah, I guess those are my guilty pleasures. It's like kind of cheesy 60s, 70s, and 80s rock would be my music guilty pleasure, I guess. I'll keep thinking about it, but those are the ones that come up for me. What about you?
Okay, yeah, I'll listen to Frankie Valli after this. And, you know, grunge had a lot of anti-consumerism, and now the concept of a musician being a sellout doesn't even exist anymore. It's just like, that's what you're supposed to do, is sell out. That's what you do.
Well, there's just no way to make money in music otherwise.
Yeah. As I alluded to, it's very difficult being a fan of Kanye West,
yep,
because I have to tell people, I'm not a Nazi, I'm not a fascist. I'm not a white supremacist. I don't support him. But I did have a plant medicine ceremony, actually, with about 15 people. And, you know, as someone I really had a strong connection to and looked up to in high school, in college, after college, I felt really hurt and betrayed with how he had used his platform and how he had, like, lost touch. And I just came to a moment of, like, forgiveness, like a kind of Christ consciousness forgiveness over, like, this is a guy who really struggles with mental health. And who I think is ultimately more of a contrarian, more than he was ever like a MAGA Trumper.
Yeah.
I think he just wore the hat to piss people off.
Yeah.
And so, is this a guy I want to have dinner with? Like, no, not really. But at the end, it's a very difficult conversation about separating the art from the artist. Particularly as he said very anti-Semitic things.
It's not difficult to separate the art from the artist. People got to get over their shit. You can respect a person's work without respecting that person. Like, let's just be very fucking clear about that. Like, it drives me bonkers when people are like burning books because, you know, someone said something offensive. Okay, well, it doesn't take away from the fact that they produced beautiful art. Just because I don't like Kanye's music is not because I don't like Kanye. It's just like most of his music doesn't speak to me.
I'll have to send you something after the show. But yeah, whether it's Roman Polanski or Wagner or Pablo Picasso or any of these problematic figures, his art that he has created has moved me very much on an emotionally and spiritual level.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's tough. And it's even tough for me to say publicly on this podcast because people are going to might have very strong feelings about that. But look, I like a lot of artists. I like a lot of musicians. That's just one that I refuse to turn my back on artistically just because he's a terrible person as a human being.
I don't even know if he's a terrible person as a human being. He like may have some things that we deem terrible that we'd collectively agree on, but that doesn't mean that like 80% of or 90% of him or 99% of him isn't a wonderful human being. I think that level of judgment is part of the problem. And it's also like, it's funny because my sense is that the people who would cancel Kanye are also the people, or who say you can't like Kanye because of the person, are also the people who would say, like, I'm not anti-Semitic, but I am anti-Israel. It's like, well, you know, you can, if you want to separate them, separate them. And if you don't want to separate them, don't separate them, but don't say you can't separate it over here and then separate it over here, right? Like, just be consistent in your worldview. I think that may get some anger as well, but
yeah.
It's like, just,
The truth is, I don't think he's a terrible person. I just have a need for people to like me. And so I feel like I just have to say that sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think he's a very sensitive, creative artist who has some mental health issues. So a lot of depth in some of his songs.
Truthfully, the most sensitive people often have a lot of mental health problems because the intensity of the world is naturally overwhelming. Now throw drugs, money, fame, and attention on top of it. Yeah, it can fuck people up, you know? So it's like, again, go back to those principles of like, do unto others, and maybe he doesn't live by that principle, but two, mind your business. Have some compassion for, you have no idea what he went through or what he's going through or who he is to get to the place where he is. So like, don't have to agree with it. Don't have to like him, but just have some compassion and recognize that his art is still the product of all of that. And some of it is beautiful.
I love that take. Maybe we can just let entertainers be entertainers without trying to force them into being role models. And it's like, I just like your music because I like your music. I don't need to know your political beliefs or your personal beliefs. It's like, you know.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, three more quick questions. What is something that no one tells you about being a dad?
I think one is like when the baby first comes, it's not surprising to not feel so much attachment to it. And you feel like a giant dirt bag when you're like, it's not really that great. But on the flip side, when you know, kids become an age where you can have a real relationship with them, it's way more meaningful than I could have imagined. Now, is that something that people don't tell you? No, you probably hear that before. But that's been probably the most surprising element of it to me as just how meaningful it is, and how it changes your perspectives. And you hear all this, right? Like everyone tells you it, but you can't really understand it until you're in it. And they're like, oh, that's what you meant.
It's good to hear it again. You know, I mean, we don't carry the baby inside of our bodies for 9 months. So that makes sense as a man. And, you know, I remember hearing a story. This is like on a Tim Ferriss podcast or something where this guy became a dad and his fellow father friend tells him, like, welcome to the human race.
Yeah.
Like you're now, and that makes me feel like I'm missing out. Like I need, I'm like what? As a single dude, I'm just a straggler who's not really contributing to the future of the species. But you know, hey, I still have a lot of time. I'm only 36.
Yeah, and again, I would be careful to like not import a judgment in that, which is the intensity of what you experience when you become a father or a mother or a parent. It's like it helps you, and it's not the only path, but I think it helps you appreciate the beauty of what it is to be human. Right. And so it's like, it's such a wonderful gift, the absence of which doesn't make you any less, you know, capable. It's just like saying like, well, you can't be enlightened if you haven't done psychedelics. It's like, no, that's fucking bullshit. And everybody knows that, but sure. Psychedelics are going to help people feel a lot more enlightened and get to that, those places that, you know, you talk about when you think about enlightenment.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Shoot.
Okay.
I won't turn that question back on you because it's a pretty one directional question on that one.
Yeah. I'll just say, the idea of getting to relive your childhood to some aspect and getting to see the newness of the world through the eyes of your own offspring certainly has its appeal.
Yes. It's wonderful. I'm not going to lie. That's probably my favorite part right now is getting to do all those things, you know, from being a 5 and 8 year old with my kids, but being like aware of just how awesome it is instead of just like kind of being in it as you are as a kid.
As adults, we get so jaded. It's like nothing new anymore.
Yeah.
So you got to do psychedelics.
It helps.
Okay. So what is your favorite podcast besides this one, of course?
I've always been a fan of Radiolab. I like how they tell stories in it. I like Smart Lists. It makes me laugh. Those would probably be the two that come to mind. I listened to Hidden Brain for a long time. I like that one. It was very narrative driven. Yeah, those would be the ones that are consistently on play on mine. I really like Pivot Pod. I really like Scott Galloway and Kara Swisher. I love their dynamic. I love how they think about things, and I enjoy their banter.
Okay, yeah, I know he has multiple podcasts. I'll check that one out because I like Kara Swisher and I like Scott Galloway.
Yeah, they're great. They're great together.
I would say, yeah, for me, I'm trying to, you were saying you don't listen to that many podcasts. I'm trying to listen to less. I often listen to 3 episodes a day, 7 days a week.
Do you listen to it like in background? Can you do other things while listening to it? Or like, does it require your full attention?
It depends. Like yesterday I had to do dishes and laundry and you have chores and you got to drive and go to the gym.
Yeah. Okay.
But even like editing photos compared to editing video only really takes up the visual part of your brain. So I can totally listen to a podcast while editing photos.
That's true. That's true. Okay. What's number one on your list right now? If you're going to recommend anything besides a good long podcast, what is it?
Most listened to. This is where like I have to be honest with myself, where it's like, I like Kanye more as an artist than Drake, but Drake was actually my most listened to artist of 2023.
Yeah.
Just because it's pop music, it's catchy, it's good for a cruise or a drive or the gym. Yeah, my most listened to podcast is Modern Wisdom with Chris Williamson, and he's actually here in Austin, Texas.
Nice.
And it's, you know, the reason I say that because it's like, well, I actually like Tim Ferriss way more than Chris Williamson. He just puts out such a volume of content and I don't know. They're just great. They're just great to listen to, even though I prefer Tim Ferriss as an interviewer. There's something that's easily digestible about his approach.
So I'm going to ask you to be prescriptive. If you're going to tell me to listen to one podcast, what is it? Would it be Chris Williamson or would it be Tim Ferriss? It sounds like those are the two you're debating between.
Yeah, no, I would say Tim Ferriss. And okay. Again, it comes back to, because he's kind of on a hiatus right now, don't be afraid to go back to listen to the top 10 Tim Ferriss episodes of all time. It doesn't matter if it's 7 years old or 5 years old or 3 years old. I really want people to engage more with like older podcasts. Like, who cares if it was 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Unless the subject matter is incredibly pulled from topical events or current events, or it's around like news, it's just incredible interviews. And yeah, Tim Ferriss is my guy.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Is there one more question? We got 4 minutes left.
Yeah.
And then I got to go hang with my kids.
One more. Final question. What is your favorite movie and why?
Fight Club.
Oh.
Because it fucking blew my mind.
Chuck Palahniuk.
Oh my God. I love so much of the philosophy that weaves through Tom Robbins, I think is also embedded in Chuck Palahniuk.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's so many great moments. I remember like at one point when they did a subliminal flash of Brad Pitt early in the movie. And I'm like, oops, where's my phone ringing? I'm like, did I just see that? and I'm like, huh? And then like they reveal it. I'm like, oh, so like it's beautifully shot. It's amazingly acted. And like the philosophy underpinning it all was just so, so great to me. And like, yeah. So Fight Club is definitely number one. There's no doubt about it. And then, you know, Austin Powers number two is always number two on the list because it's so goddamn ridiculous. I don't know how it stands up in time, but those would be the two movies I'd always put on along with Baraka.
Oh, yeah.
After the bar. You seen Baraka?
Yeah, I've seen Baraka. Yeah. By those Ron Frick. It's just great. Like no dialogue, no character. It's just
beautiful.
A visual trip around the world.
Yep. Yeah, those would be my always go-to three movies that after the bar, back when I went to bars, would be on the roster. What about you? What's your favorite?
Yeah, so the reason I ask as a film major, film lover, is I believe that people's favorite film is their favorite film because they often relate to the main protagonist, one of the main characters, or the main narrative story arc.
Yep.
So I'm wondering, you know, what in Fight Club draws you in, but like for me it's Good Will Hunting because it's the movie that got me into movies.
Yep.
And I relate to Will Hunting as kind of a precocious young man who's trying to figure out how to best use his God-given gifts, how to figure out how to make romantic relationships work, and how to come to terms with his like childhood trauma and be like a functioning adult in society.
I feel like the end of that sentence needs "from my cold dead hands." I don't know why. I just feel like that's from there, like Charleston Heston right there. But yeah, no, it makes sense. I mean, I can totally see that about you.
So good.
Like working that out. And I think, you know, we could probably dissect it from our childhoods, but I'm sure Fight Club appeals to me because I was always taught that there's a path that you should follow and, you know, the awareness of like, hey, maybe that's not your path and maybe that path actually sucks was a gift. I think it kind of gave to me. And that like there were people, it's not even that narrative, but like that there were people thinking that way too. It was just an illumination to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Great film. Yeah. Love it.
Yep. I'll have to go back and watch Good Will Hunting. I haven't watched it in a long, long time.
And Good Will Hunting features 3 or 4 songs from one of my favorite emo musicians, Elliot Smith.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So love that. I mean, the soundtrack is great.
Yeah.
I mean, you got Robin Williams. Come on. As the therapist. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love it. But what's the... Dead Poets Society. I feel like Dead Poets Society is also like right up there in terms of narrative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's worth a rewatch.
Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, this has been great.
I hope our listeners feel like they know Ronan, the man, just a little bit better.
And I hope they know Chris, the man, just a little bit better. What was I going to call you? James Buchanan. I mean, they know James Buchanan, Chief Podcast Officer, a little bit better.
Yeah, yeah. No, I like that. Let's get some shirts made.
Yeah, that sounds good. And I'll be the mascot, chief mascot.
Cool.